Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Danson.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest today is known as Math Boy, a strong player who received his PhD in mathematics a couple decades ago and has been beating the casinos ever since. Math Boy, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
Now, how did you get started beating casinos? What did you do?
I guess I started when I was I went to a conference in Las Vegas, and I just looked at stuff, and then I came back. I went on BG. I got a Frank Fetti book that told me in the back to look at a professional blackjack. Read that, and I started to count cards. You know, did a little while in grad school, and did a little screwing around, and then once the internet came, everything was too good to be true. And you know, after a couple of years, and I had like a real job for a year and a half, I just quit my job and started gambling all the time.
Were you beating casinos before you got your PhD?
If you count like crappy red chip counting games, you know, beating, you know, it's like I was no threat. I remember like my first trip, I won $285, and I was so nervous, my hand was shaking, and they asked if there's something wrong with me. And then on the second thing, I said, yeah, you know, I lost a little bit, and I came back at the home, and I saw, oh, look, you lost $285. You'd won $285. I, like, broke even. But, I mean, that's not going to be anything that anyone cares about, you know. So everyone has to start somewhere.
So really, what kicked it off for you was online gambling. And what year was that?
I think 1999 it started, you know, 1999, then 2000 it started to take off, and eventually you're sitting in like a job and you're thinking about how much money that you're losing by not gambling, and that's the point where you should probably quit your job, you know, and that's what happened. So I wanted to like quit, you know, in 2000, so I quit in like November of 2000, so I remember the year, you know what I mean? And
that was the very early days. You know, I mean, I think the very first casinos that opened were either in 98 or 99.
Probably 98. But those are the days when you'd use credit cards. And you would, like, let's say how much you could deposit depend on your credit cards. And if you, like, won, they'd refund the amount to your credit card and they send you a check. So what you want to do is, because let's say you only have $10,000 on your credit card, that's all the deposit you could make over a couple of days before you got stuff back. So you would, like, overpay your credit card. So like, let's say you had a $2,000 bill, you sent them $12,000. And now it's kind of like you've got like a $20,000 credit limit that you can play more. And that was even pre-PayPal. But that was crazy. You'd have like 50 small checks in the beginning, you know. But that was the very start.
And did you have problems getting stiffed in the beginning?
Not the very beginning. I mean, I don't know. It may be a statistical thing that the more you do, the more you know. Well, and then I don't really remember. I think that people had to start to lose money. A lot of them, they would be Ponzi schemes, and we would joke with each other that, hey, can you please deposit here so they can pay me? And after a while, the Ponzi scheme blows up, and then they stop paying you. So in the very beginning, they're all making money, and they're all paying you. Then some would start to go out of business, and they would stiff you. And you know, and some of them you had to kind of get a feel for what software policed their people better. And, you know, it's like micro gaming was fairly good. You'd always be okay with micro gaming, but, you know, there'd be brand X software. You wouldn't know. It was a wild one. It was great.
Yeah. I mean, the response that I would get from other people was, oh, you don't know if they're cheating. You don't know if you're going to get paid. And, you know, my attitude was, well, yeah, it's high risk, but it's really high reward, too. So,
it was absurd. I mean, but you could come up with different tests. I mean, I didn't have a PhD in statistics, but I taught myself. And if you could come up with a certain, you know, test to start off with, like you play, and if you're worried, then you're like, okay, I'm going to record this and see if it makes sense and try to figure out, you know, a priori if they're cheating you. And some of them were and some of them weren't. But yeah, there's so many, but there's some, but, and you know, it turns out that most of the major softwares were clean, you know, like Microgaming, Boss Media, RTG was clean, yeah. But they wouldn't police their people. So their people might rip you off.
Right.
And, Casino on Net, you know, we made a lot of money off of them, so they were clean, but some of them had switches where they could cheat you if you want too much. So you could, you know, and then you'd have to test to see once you suspected that, what would happen. So like if you're playing, if you make say $100,000 on real time gaming or on a micro gaming, right? You know, a lot of times that they'd make a system wide switch on you, we think. And then you could go and play like 10 play nickel video poker. And if they didn't, and if they never gave you a royal at nickel 10 play video poker over, you know, X thousand hands, then, you know, you're pretty sure that they wouldn't give you a jackpot. So that you could test for it.
Unfortunately for me, the very first casino I played, which I think was in 98, maybe 99, ripped me off for a very large amount of money. So it kind of soured me for a couple of years, and I got out. But then I got back in, and, you know, it was just too good to walk away from.
You know, a lot of – there was – they would – you know, I always – when I try to do a play, I start off small. And I have a proof of concept before I go big a lot of times. And that's – but you did a couple $100 here, a couple $100 there. And then you'd have other people that would say they wouldn't get ripped off, although you know that bad experiences hold like so much more weight than good experiences, you know, when you're hearing reports. But yeah, I can understand it. And, but it worked. If that didn't work, I would have lost $5,000 and would have been out forever, but it was clean. So things like deposit 100, get 100, and you have to play like $400 at $2 hand blackjack is kind of hard to lose at. You know, and that's what it was. That's the order of magnitude of what you're getting when you're first starting.
Yeah. Although, was that because you were building your bankroll to play $400 worth of $2 a hand blackjack as opposed to just betting the whole 200 on one hand?
Well, I'm just saying you could.
Yeah.
And so when you first start out, you do that. But yeah, I started off doing what we called like do or die in that, you know, in theory, everybody doesn't like to lose. You have to kind of flip this in your head and you want to lose or make a lot of money. So yeah, so you do or die. You would put it all on, you'd do like one hand, you know, one hand or whatever. We had in Playtech, we'd play virtual darts or virtual dice. We'd play like 00 in roulette. We were playing like, I don't know how big a spin, like, you know, slots at one point. But that's what, once you get a bankroll, you try to do that because it's quicker and you look like an idiot. That's my theory, is that if you lose a lot, you look like an idiot. And if you win, you look like an idiot who got lucky. So, you know, look like an idiot is usually a pretty good strategy if you're not an idiot.
Well, also, in the long run, you're losing less EV if you lose all your money on one bet. You've only given up. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, people have different risk tolerances. And I'll tell you, online, a lot of these college kids that were doing it, they had very, very low risk tolerance, or they would never want to lose, or they'd complain if they lost, like if they only made $20 off 100. So a lot of people were very, and you know, a lot of people, they don't have the gambling mentality, they don't build a bankroll, they just spend everything they get, and then they have some small bad streak and it wipes them out. So, but you're right, you know, for the vast majority of the time, you know, I would treat everything like a loss rebate. That's with my mentality. And and it was just pretty optimal to do that. And the casinos like it because they win most of the time. So they're happy.
Right. Although eventually a lot of the online casinos did start limiting how much you could bet in order to qualify for the bonus. Like, they would not allow you to bet the entire thing on one bet.
I started. That was mostly after 2006, though, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And after 2006, it didn't matter because you had the Port Security Bill. So after the Port Security Bill, we didn't play in the U.S. We had some operations in Canada, but I think we pretty much only did micro gaming because at that time I was the only guy that had figured out like micro gaming progressives. So before 2006, I was doing really well because I figured out when these micro gaming slot progressives were good, and no one else in the world had figured this out. And you could just tell because Ken Smith had this website where he'd graph them and when and you'd see it going up at a solid rate. Then I'd play to this kink up because I put in all this action and it would never kink up again before or after me. So that meant that no one else was playing it. So we went up to Canada and we mostly just did those slot progressives. You really look like an idiot there because, you know, you're just playing a slot progressive and you lose the vast majority of the time.
Right. So, I mean, the other benefit to losing, and this, you know, this is true in brick and mortar casinos as well, is you get more bonuses if you lose. So.
Oh, definitely. That's what would happen. Like at some Playtech stuff, like we just play the darts or you heads and tails, where you basically had to call heads or tails like 8 times in a row. And if you lose, they just give you more money. And then if you were like up even like $100, you're betting like $100 on a virtual dart that pays 100 to 1 or something. But if you're up even $100, they would stop giving you bonuses. But if you keep on losing, you lose it. So you'd be up like $200 and go, shoot, I got to lose this $200 because you're going to give me thousands of dollars of bonuses. You want to really get ahead before you got 86 out of the casino. So yeah, losing is the best cover, right? And it's great.
So a lot of players on online casinos would basically just be harvesting the sign-up bonuses, and that was their entire play, and it was a lucrative play. But it sounds like you actually played the games and found lucrative things to do actually gambling in these casinos.
Well, doing the newbie tour, what we called this finite. You know what I mean? There's only so many things to do. And like Richard said, if you play optimally and you lose your money, then you'll find out that people give you more stuff. And there was an active, you know, bulletin boards people talking about what to do. So yeah, there'd be people, they just have their friend, they do a newbie tour and, you know, it'd be like a kill me now thing. And, but some people you could, like, I remember there was like a report, someone complained about Orbital Casino, which was doing 100-100. They go, oh my God. They go like, oh, they didn't give me my bonus. You see the reply from Orbital Casino that says, oh, well, this person has given us like 105 different like variations of the name, address, blah, blah, blah in Montreal. And everyone was like, oh my God, well, that didn't work. And then I was thinking, what he caught? He got away with it like 104 times. That's, you know, how they were. I mean, we used real people and this guy was like, just, you know, making up stuff. And he made like 104 claims. It's amazing, you know. But that's what 1998, 1999, 2000 were like. So,
yeah, it got to the point where, because we always used real people as well. And in the later years, it got to the point where they asked one of our clients to send a photograph of himself holding up his passport so they could see that the picture matched. You know, yeah, they got really, really strict on.
So
you know.
I had this old dude here. He was so old that his passport didn't have a picture on it.
Wow.
He was like, this guy in like 2005 was like 80 or something. So, I mean, he's passed away since, but I had to drive him to get a new driver's license, you know, just so that he'd have a picture on it. I'd never seen it before in my life, but that was pretty wild, you know.
So you haven't had any urge to go to New Jersey and check out the online stuff there?
No, because I'm done with that. I mean, the only urge I've had is I think that what's going on with the sports is, if I was going to do anything, I'd figure that out because it is so cool that so many states are going to be going online or somebody, whatever, and you know, they'll screw up in different ways. And it's going to be an exciting time for people that want to travel and do sports. It's, I mean, not, I, I kind of quit doing sports in like 2003-ish. But, you know, right now, if I was going to get into anything now, that would be the fun thing to get into, I think.
Yeah, and you know, it was hard to branch out back then when you were doing online stuff, because many times I talked to my partner about looking at sports, online betting with sports, but, you know, when you're running through a forest that just has $100 bills all over the floor to pick up, it's hard to go say, hey, maybe we should go down the road and look over there, you know, at the sports betting as well, because there were bonuses and everything in the sports books.
Well, you didn't make money from the bonuses so much in the sports book, because they would really take it personally. What you would make money is them being shitty sports books. So there was this place, Aces Gold, that they had like Big Free Friday. You'd be like, oh, look, it's like you can bet +100 on either way on the football game. And they would let you buy on or off any point for like 10 cents. So like, I think buying off the three is on and off the three, I think is worth 25 cents. I don't know. I don't remember. So like you'd bet I'd bet the -2.5. You'd have a friend bet +3.5. And it was like disgusting. And then you could do these hockey parlays that were amazing, and baseball parlays. And I came up with a way to do what they called the grand salami in hockey, only I was stupid and told to people about it when I was starting to do it. So, and then it was like, I won like 10 bets in a row. I'm like, oh shit, I should never have said anything. And then, you know, and now I heard like a couple of years ago, a guy was telling me about the play, and I'm like, yeah, I did that in like 2002. So it was pretty funny. You're betting on like the total points in all hockey games in a night. And you're betting on, basically, when, you know, that someone will bet, will score like a heck of a lot, blow it away, and then it'll go over a lot of the time. Instead of just, you know, adding up all the medians. Because that's the way hockey goes. Like, you know, a lot of things are like 3-4, it's not a lot. Then someone will be like 8-6, 14, and that just makes the sum go way over the sum of the medians. So that's just what we call a skew play, but.
You mentioned loss rebates a bit. Now, you seem to have a different view on how to approach loss rebates than many other players do. In general, without giving up too much, how is your approach different?
Well, when you've got, like, if you're working on a table game like blackjack, like a lot of, like some people will make, like, we'll find out the, well, the first thing I do is I say you want to have your goal, right? Because I've just started, when you start out, you have to have a goal that you're going to hit. And if you don't have that goal of the hit, win or lose, you're just going to be messing with yourself. You need to write it down to begin with. Then, a lot of times you just figure out the estimated time to reach the goal. And I could figure out the probability of hitting, making or losing through like some mathematics. And in things like blackjack, you actually don't want to, in blackjack, basic strategy means you've got a decision and you maximize your expected value of the money at risk. And if you're doing a loss rebate, it's actually optimal to maximize or to minimize the amount of juice you give the casino per dollar of variance you give them. So as a rule of thumb, you would like play as if the true count was +3. So you do like crazy things like split 90 versus ace, double 9 versus 7, and you'd look a little crazy, and it was mathematically optimal. So, but yeah, and
we should
simple formulas.
We should talk about that that casino that was offering that. That was one of the most incredible things.
Oh, that was so fun. Yeah, it was real time game. We had three casinos. It's a make or lose $5,000, right? And all my friends, they would go in and you get up like $500 bets, I think. Or was it make or win or lose $3,000? I forget. But they had
it was $5,000. It was $5,000. It was a $500 max. You could play three hands if you wanted to.
Okay. So remember my maxim about you want to max. Well, when you play three hands, you're giving up three times. You know, you're not minimizing the juice the casino giving the variance. So you it's actually optimal just to play one hand.
Right, but the deal was it a 10% or a 20% loss rebate? I can't remember
It started at 20, and then I was down. I ended up being down like 50, 60 grand. They moved it to 25. And I think they were in like Cyprus, so I'd wake up in the morning, and I'd play all three. Then some host would go, yeah, we play. You play, like I credit, reset your account, you can play again. I go, okay, and I do it like five times before lunch. It went about in Cyprus time, the guy would go home for the day. So I would have like, you know, three casinos times five times, like 15 of these loss rebates before lunch, like every day. It was crazy, you know. That was,
yeah,
crazy.
You
and I had emailed about it.
Yeah, because you could do it multiple times a day, even if you won. So,
yeah, because
you know,
you're going across three places. Yeah, they were crazy. It was fun.
Yeah.
I like not having to think sometimes. And it was like one of these things where, you know, once you've got it down, you don't have to do anything. I'm just playing like one hand at 500 with a true count of plus three. And I know I probably last a little longer than other people because I played a little, because I didn't look like everybody else. Everybody else was playing three hands of basic strategy. So,
yeah.
But yeah. That was a lot of fun. Yeah, they were tough to claim for them. I think I made like $250,000, but I had one of my clients, he had to call and bug the shit out of me to get paid like crazy. And then we had to negotiate for a lesser amount. And so they were just, that's the part I hated. It was just calling, you know, but I had to do that a lot. And then they paid
you
off so that, you know, they pay off so that they wouldn't take the phone call.
Yeah, the actual playing was sort of the least time-consuming part of the whole business. It was all about bookkeeping and chasing the money and researching who, you know, new places.
Yeah, the bookkeeping, and if you didn't watch out, you wouldn't notice you didn't get paid. So you had to make sure, you know, if you do like 10 places a day, you've got to make sure credits to your credit card at one point, then PayPal or Neteller or whatever, that they'd match up. And you had to make sure you're getting paid from like hundreds of plays a week or 100 plays a week. It was just, you know, a nightmare of bookkeeping. So if the IRS had audited any of us and who really kept records, they would have gone crazy, you know, and they'd be like, okay, there's like 5,000 lines of records, go at it. You know, they probably wouldn't care. At that point,
you in our email exchange before the show, you told the story of you and your wife meeting me back in 2003 or 4, something like that. Now, I personally have no recollection of that meeting, either you or your wife, but I believe you. What you said my comment was at the time sounds exactly like something I would say. So tell us what happened and why it bothered you that you had met me.
Well, this is at Harrah's New Orleans, and I was a friend of the guy you'd had on the Think Frank B, and Frank B taught me. He said, you know, oh, you know, you can always look at the guy and see what he's doing, follow him around. So I want to be in New Orleans. Once in a while, they'd have these big promotions where everyone in the country would come to the regionally, and Vegas people would come. I didn't want any Vegas people to know who I was. I didn't want any Vegas people to know what I was playing, but I wanted to know who they were and what they were playing. So. And it was like, you know, late morning, and I come up, and there's like the optimal thing to play is video poker. Of course, Bob Dancer's there, and my wife was there. And, you know, I had played next to Bob before, and I just got up because, you know, I didn't want him to see me play. And then I told my wife, I go, hey, well, let's go to lunch. And she goes, oh, it's like 10:50. You know, they don't have lunch out yet. I go, yeah, but they'll put out it's still breakfast. I go, yeah, but we can pay the breakfast price. And in 10 minutes, he'll just put out the lunch entrees and we'll eat lunch. And Bob looked up and he goes, oh, that's a good AP play. And I'm like, oh, shit, I just outed myself. So.
Yep, it is an AP play.
But,
but I didn't pay any attention to who I said it to. So, well.
Yeah, you know, you got to, but you do that like 100 times and maybe five guys will remember. And then you'll have five guys like looking at you when you play. So. That's the problem, you know.
Yeah, welcome to my world.
Greek. Well, that's really a problem if you play things that other people don't, because, you know, if they see you there playing, they're going to want to know, why is he playing that game? And that's the last thing you want as a player, is other people trying to, you know, to figure out what it is you're playing.
Yeah, you would have, like, you'd have, like, video poker clothes. And then you, if you were going to do other stuff, you would, I would change clothes, have a different hat. I wore, like, a freaking baseball cap for 15 years. It took me, like, a year of quitting gambling before I realized I don't need to wear a baseball cap every day. But, you know, you do a costume change when you want to just look around. You change your, I would have different body language. You walk slow. You know, you don't walk like fast with a purpose like APs do in a casino. You don't look bright. You know what I mean? You just have that little dull haze of being in a casino. So a lot of stuff. I can see a lot of APs just by seeing how they move in a casino. And once you know that, you can avoid your own, you know, behavior. But yeah, you're kind of, and even if it's bad, because if you're stuck on a machine, you're stuck there, you can't move, and then you're just on display for people if they happen to look over. So, you know.
Now, let's change subjects a little bit. Greektown, that's a casino in Detroit, Michigan. Back when they opened, they had a bit of a candy store. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so that was like in 2001, and I had just quit. And like, I remember in February, they had like, I remember that Bob, that somehow you told them to have, oh, you can have 0.66, you know, cash back and 9-6 jacks, and then they would do it, but you probably told them, you know, saying, oh, don't have any promotions, but they decided to have promotions set up. So they started out in February, and they had like double points just in graveyard. And when I did that, I lasted like 3 days, and it just fucking killed me. I mean, you'd go there, you'd always wait, you'd go there, you'd play until 8 in the morning, you'd go back to your hotel, you'd get woken up by the maid, you'd wake up at 3 after like a couple hours of sleep, you'd go to the casino, just fart around for 5 hours. It was a nightmare, so I quit. And then you find out in March, it was like, oh, our double points is so successful, we're going to do triple points 24 hours. That obviously changes everything. I found out that at the time I was younger, I could play like 10 hours of video poker a day. That was like without going crazy. So, they had 96 jacks. They had this blackjack. All these other people would play. Did a couple other games. I remember I went around to the bar, the high limit bar. You had to qualify to go back there. And I would just tip the bartender like $20 a shift and say, hey, this is for the whole shift. You'd work like $2,000. And then I was playing on that once, and the machine had like a meltdown, or I was playing or a friend was playing. We had a meltdown, and they had to take out the entire guts of the machine to put new guts in the machine. So I put in like a $100 bill. I start playing, and after like 4 hands, I look and I got like 85 credits. I'm like, well, I don't remember hitting a couple full houses. What the hell happened? And I realized that they took out the guts of a $5 machine. This is when you had coins, by the way. And they put in a $1 machine. So I'm like, holy shit. And if this was like, this play was worth like $2,000 a day, just straight playing. And, you're like, what do you do now? I mean, if you're in Las Vegas, you're good because you know that it's an error and you can just take advantage of them. They can't do anything, but you're in the middle of a promotion that's worth $2,000 a day. If they catch you, they kick you out. They may consider cheating by Michigan law because, you know, we had to call Nersessian, and Nersessian said, you know, well, they usually follow Nevada law, but there's no case law. And I've just got this thing. I don't want to be case law. So like, we can play it and just like try to pay like X dollars for Royal. We can, you know, sell it to someone else or we could turn it in. So I played off the $100. And I put in like another $100 bill, and then I looked surprised at the camera and pointed out to him that it happened, and I actually turned it in instead of playing it. The promotion was so good, and the casino had done so many things, I didn't want to get kicked out or found out, and I didn't want to, you know. So that was kind of, you know, demoralizing in a weird way. So life could have gone a different way if I had played it and just hit a couple royals. So
actually, wouldn't it have been, I mean, if you had played it and just played it for coin, wouldn't...
Okay, the very concept of playing for coin, that was not in the video poker zeitgeist at that point in time. I first started playing for coin around 2004, 2005 for some things, but at that time, no one even considered that. But you're right, it may have... Well, let's say you give up like a percent and a half, something like that, before you play it. So I'd have to write down the numbers. You're probably right. It probably would have been optimal to play four coin and just do it forever. You'd have to lock down the machine because if any other pro found it, you'd be screwed. Right. And I was there with a friend and his wife, so we could have locked it down. But yeah, we didn't consider that. But you know, if I did it today, that would be an option. But we didn't think about it then.
And what would be the value of four coin at that point? Would it be no W2Gs? Was that the main thing that you were after, or what?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, the one thing that we realized later was that someone was playing it, and it was so messed up that they would hit like a straight flush for 1250, and it wouldn't even get them W2G. But on the dollar thinking, you know, if you think it's a dollar machine, it would only get a W2G for 4,000 coins.
Right.
So you get like, what, 1,000 coins for like four coin royal? So that would be, you know, that would not,
you
would think, it'd be $5,000, but they would think it would be $1,000 because of the way the machine was messed up. Does that make sense?
Would 1,000 coins fall into the tray, or how would that work? If they would have to hand pay you 5,000, they wouldn't have taken too long for them to realize something was up.
Yeah, you're right. I know a lot of places they got like, well, you know, now this is all like obsolete because no one uses coins, but you know, when people used to use overpayers and skippers and stuff, you used to have a rule of thumb that if you had to empty that, they had to refill it more than twice, they'd investigate. And then it didn't hold close to 1,000. So yeah, probably would have just spilled out all the $5 coins and they would have had to make a fill or two. So you're right. If you hit a 20 grand royal, it would have been over because they would have thought, what the hell's going on? But, so yeah, you know, so we didn't think about it and, you know, that, yeah, you're right. They would have just had to fill it and then we down and they would have been done. So
yeah, I forgot it was coins. If it was credits, I think it would have worked, but
yeah. So much as changed in the way we think about things. That was just when they're starting to do credits. I think that they had some credit machines in the casino and the vast majority of them didn't have credits. It was very odd, you know, but I, you know, like, what's this new ticket thing? You know, it was,
yeah.
So that was, but tickets have obviously made, I shouldn't say obviously, but tickets have made life a lot easier in terms of, you know, playing high stakes, but there are some things like where you used to put in, like the machines used to pay a couple extra coins every once in a while, or you'd put in the coin and it would credit as a credit, but it would go down to the tray. So you had, that's what we called like an overpayer and a skipper. And those were plays that happened. They were machine errors. And when you go to tickets, they don't exist anymore. So, you know, and those were very lucrative plays. You know, if you keep on having extra, if you every time you hit for five, it gives you six like every other time, that's just such a huge play. It's not even funny. And, you know, if people have like a little finger to push down, they could pay for five coins in a video poker thing and only, you know, pay four coins for it. That's just so huge. It's not even funny. But so, yeah, we can play a lot quicker. You don't have to put in $100 bills. You can just go buy like high limit tickets at stuff. I would imagine what Bob was doing, just coin, like, no, you'd buy racks of coins, right?
Uh-huh.
Bob? Yeah. So that's what you'd have to do, I guess. And that would be quicker. That would be the equivalent of buying a ticket now, but things have changed.
Now, I first heard about Greektown in 2005. And at that point, there were some players, they called themselves the Greektown Nine, who had been 86 by Greektown for taking advantage of this triple point promotion way back when, including one lady who had hit a $10,000 pick'em poker royal. And even though they had pick'em poker machines where 6,000 was the number for a royal if you played on the right machine, but she was playing one on 3% tighter, hit a 300,000-to-1 royal and got 86 for having the nerve to do that.
I remember one weird thing about that, Bob, was that they had like progressive. I think that was the machine where they had progressives on like a couple different things. And the progressives were resetting to like a very high number. I'm pretty sure that was the pick'em, the later pick'em. And so that people hit a bunch of those. But I may be mixing up my plays. But yeah, was that actually a woman or was that someone's mother? Is that this guy Bob's mother?
Yes. Somebody who's been on the show, it was his mother.
Yeah. And, yeah. Oh, he was on the show. Oh, I didn't realize he was on the show. But yeah, okay.
Yeah, but not under his. The name you would likely know him under, so we just won't mention who it was. Okay, shifting subjects. Three-card poker. Now, I knew about the betting the pairs plus when you could see the dealer's hole card. You had an entirely different method of being in the game. What did you do?
Well, it started out that everybody else, they see the dealer's hole card explicitly. But now people have heard about edge sorting or playing the turn, like, because what Phil Ivey did with all these casinos in Baccarat. But initially you thought the story is it started out of the horseshoe in Vegas where the horseshoe would either be up or down. And then people would turn like the tens and aces up and the other stuff down and you could kind of have an idea of what's going on. Well, the problem is that, you know, when they pitch the cards, it messes up the turn. But in three-card poker, if they don't box it when they do stuff, and you get the right dealer, you could have the entire deck be correct. You start out, you play off of imperfections in the printing of the card. You have up be queens, kings, and aces, downs be everything else. And then after a certain amount of time, if you had the table locked up, you could have complete information over what was high and what was low. And, given that you could tell all the cards, there'd be some cards that were kind of goofy and you'd have to search for a very large, you'd have to search for the better dealers and the better decks. But yeah, we had a crew where we did this in Vegas. We'd take over the table and we'd play through the whole shift and we'd play two hands a table max. And it was pretty cool, you know, but we actually quit after a couple of months because the online gaming was so good. I'm like, geez, you know, you got to deal with 6 people, 8 people. You got to exhaust you when you get home. It takes a couple of days to prepare. So it's like 2 weeks for a week of play. But you were making so much online that we're like, this is just silly. So we'd actually quit partially because the online was so ridiculously strong.
Well, the other problem with that play is, as you mentioned, I mean, you're chopping the money 6 ways. You have to have 6 skilled players.
You don't need 6 skilled players. You need 2 skilled players. You'd have I got like a hole carder I had met, and then who'd read the number of ups, and then I would watch a dealer to make sure they didn't flip the deck, and I would give everybody else instructions. And we took people that were mostly not gamblers to be the high rollers, and the rest of the table was filled up with people who just. We taught them how to sort. So those other people, they didn't need any experience. So we would give like the sorters 5%. We'd give the big players, a big player cut of what, 10% a piece. And then the other person and I, we'd chop it up. So we didn't have to make 6. And it's better if you don't have 6 APs because you want to control your information. If you have it with 6 APs and then something goofy happens, all of a sudden you got 16 trying to do this and then it explodes.
Right. Yep. Yep.
So, you know, yep. I always want to kind of, you know, isolate. I would never have anyone with any whole card knowledge being a big player or a spinner. because I don't want them to know that it exists. You know, but it was a blast. And, you know, casinos treat you really well. There's kind of a weird thing that when hole carding, the general consensus is that you've got the guy who's spotting, got a guy that's betting, and they can't know each other for the most part. You know, I'm sure there's exceptions, but they couldn't know each other for the most part. But if you've got six people on the table, you all have to know each other because you're talking and you've got different verbal signals you have to send back and forth. And, I remember like if the dealer flipped the deck, you know, which is pain in the ass, you could just think of doing everything backwards, but it's just too complicated. So I just say Shazam. And then that meant that the deck was destroyed. We had to start over. So it was,
The other problem, is that most of the places had pretty small limits. Most of the places in Vegas was only a $100 limit at video poker. I mean, at three-card poker. There were a few.
I believe that Mandalay Bay, MGM, no, or MGM was 1,000, Bellagio was 1,000, Caesars was 500, Mandalay Bay was 500. What's that stupid thing between Monte Carlo was 300. Where else should we go? You know, but we had plenty of $500 and $1,000 games.
Yeah,
it didn't. This is before the win. So, but yeah, we were able to. You know, if we'd slum it with a $300 game. Yeah, but you wouldn't play it everywhere. You'd wait for the ships to change. You know, when all the ships are changed. You have everybody go out and scout, and then some guy says we find something, and you'd all converge on that. Or so you'd have to be running around at like say the shift changes at 12 at like, you know, 11:50, and then Caesars was off by like 2 hours, so you'd scout Caesars before or something, or their shift change would be different than the dealers, or something like that. I don't remember exactly, but we're able to get $500,000 plays basically every day that we're there.
Hmm.
All right, we're going to have to take a break for commercials. We are nowhere near through our questions with MathBoy, so I fear this is going to go into more than one show, which is likely to be good. It's certainly good news for Richard and me, and I suspect good news for our audience as well. The South Point has more than 10,000 games returning more than 99%. This is more than anyone else has. In January, Monday through Thursday, there's the $500,000 spin-to-win promotion. Play $500 coin in, slots or 2,000 coin in video poker, and spin a virtual wheel on your machine. All prizes are free play or points, and those points may be turned into cash or free play. Free play ranges from $5 to $100, weighted towards the lower end. Points range from 2,500, which is worth 750, to 100,000, worth 300. Good luck on that. The prizes are weighted to the lower end, but last year they averaged about $12 each time. $12 on video poker for 2,000 means 0.60%. Since the normal slot club is 0.30, which still you accumulate, this means triple points, 0.9. 4 days a week. So there's a limit of 4 wards per day, meaning $8,000 coin in for video poker players. If you're a high limit player, $8,000 goes real quick. But quarter players, that's all day. It's playing with a 0.9% slot club. On Monday, January 21st, Martin Luther King Day, there will be a $1,200 hot seat promotion where every 3 minutes between 8 a.m. and midnight, someone with a player's card inserted wins $100 free play. Week 2 of the free video poker classes, Tuesday, January 15th at noon in the Silverado Lounge. The first class that day is 9-7 double bonus. Second class beginning at 2 p.m. is intro to 9-6 double-double bonus. The classes sound similar, but they're quite different because of the return for the flush and straight is different in the two games. Both introductory classes will be useful for higher paying games later in the semester.
At videopoker.com, it's the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the Gold membership, $8.95 a month, or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get correction on most of the games. The game of the week is Max Action Poker. Max Action Poker is where you play 6 to 10 coins per line, and all of the pay schedule categories from 3 of a kind and higher are bumped. You get a more valuable game the more coins you play. You also get more variance. It will require learning an entirely new strategy, since flushes and straights pay so much more than you're used to. Your intuition is going to be off because it's going to be different. It's not particularly difficult to learn a new strategy, given there's a variety of video poker software out there, including Video Poker for Winners, where we'll create a strategy for you. The highest returning versions of this game are slightly under 99%. So it's going to take a heck of a promotion to make it worthwhile. On the other hand, since the game does return so little, a lot of casinos have a high fee on the game, which you can exploit that way. All right. We are talking to Math Boy.
Hi.
Hi. I lost where I was in the thing. Okay. At one point, you created a video poker variance splitting pool. I thought I was kind of up on what was happening in the video poker world, but I've never heard of it. What is it in non-mathematical, radio-friendly language?
Okay. So give a slight history. I found that you always want to make a market. So we would have people that play similar plays. You play like five hands of $5 jacks or better. Five play $5 jacks or better. And I'd say, like, I'm going to play 1,000 hands. You'll play 2,000 hands. That's very easy to split because you just take your results, you know, and then you do it like one and two. But the problem is, what if you have like someone wants to play single play jacks or better, and someone wants to play, you know, double bonus? You'd end up having like 50 different agreements, and they would take a long time to get filled. So what I did is I made the following arrangement: is that you'd bid on variance. So what you do is you say you have jacks or better, and you were going to get, you know, you forget about cash back. Say you'd play, you know, 1,000 hands of $5 single line jacks or better, and you're going to have X dollars of EV. You add that to your results and report your results, report the game. And then I had a spreadsheet that would report the variance to that, the variance you get. And then someone else could play, like, say, 100 play super aces. They'd report like the EV adjusted, or I guess the spreadsheet would do the EV adjusted, you know, result. And it would spit out a variance. So what you just do is you'd bid on variance. So instead of doing like the 1,000, 2,000, remember the variance is in like square units. It'd be like I'd bid like 2 billion and the other guy bid 5 billion in variance. And then between us, it'd be 7 billion in variance. And the advantage of this is that you can go between any games and play whatever you want. It's not completely fair because like single play is riskier than 100 play, for example, but it made it work for almost everything. And, you know, we could play with a much, much larger bankroll. And I ran this team for several years. Does that make sense to you, Bob?
Not entirely.
I'm trying to understand the bidding for variance. So it means if you're willing to take more variance, you get more EV.
Yeah, so when you for each hand, you get a certain amount of variance, right? And the nice thing about variance is additive, that if you play 100 hands, you get 100 times the variance of one hand. So you say, I'm going to play the variance associated with this much, but you just put it in the variance term. So if let's say it was a $10,000 variance on one hand, and you want to bid a million, that would be, you know, what? 100 times 10,000, and you'd go, okay, so that's 100 hands. So you could use the spreadsheet I had, which if you put in like the game and the number of lines, it would spit out the variance. You could estimate what you're going to play. Say, I'm going to play through this much variance, right? And then that's what you would bid into the pool for, like, maybe say 2 months. You try to settle up every 2 months or something like that.
So the bid was the number of hands you were going to play. Is that it?
Well, you'd take it was a function of the hands you'd want to play. So you'd guess what you were going to play, and then you'd put it in the spreadsheet, and the spreadsheet would transform the number of hands you want to play into how much variance that would be equivalent to. Does that make sense? So you put in the spreadsheet, you go say, if I play jacks 1,000 or 10,000 hands, how much variance is that? And let's say it would say, just for the sake of argument, say it's $2 billion of variance. Then you'd put in $2 billion because that's what you thought you'd play in the next 2 months. And then you'd split it based on your variance bid.
I see. And then how would the, if my variance bid was $2 billion, and yours was $4 billion, does that mean the split would be two-thirds, one-third?
Yes.
I get it.
Exactly. Yeah.
Really interesting. Obviously, you have to have people you can really trust.
Yeah, you know, the one thing that I think that wasn't the people you really trust, I think that one of Bob's things that I came to realize over time is that people overestimate their accuracy. And I think that's more of an issue because after several years of playing, you can tell, you can have a suspicion of what's going on. You know what I mean? I would try to make rules like you can only play, like 4 hours at a time. But, some people, this is APs are all, they're all kind of, they're smart. They can justify things themselves, and they would maybe go around the rules. I don't know. But I think that more people were not as accurate as they thought, and that came out more in the numbers. I mean, so you'd have to have people that are like I would love to have Bob on it because Bob is. I mean, everyone's seen Bob doesn't play 1,000 hands an hour. Bob plays something like 500-600 hands an hour when I saw him, because he sees it, he checks, he hits okay. And other people, they see it, they check okay, and they play like 1,000 hands an hour, and they don't know what mistakes they make. So if you play perfectly, it works out great. But you'll find out some people don't play perfectly, but they believe they play perfectly, but try to tell that to them, and also, when someone's playing 1,000 hands an hour, it's very hard to sit there and check them. You can't come in after they played 4 hours and then check them because they're on their own. So that's the only downside is that mistakes. Hopefully everybody's mistake rate would be about the same, but you can't really. You can't control for everything.
Interesting. Were you talking about the Bob who's a co-host on Gambling with an Edge? Because I thought he played faster than that.
I just know that I thought you play. What do you play as? How many hands an hour do you play, Bob?
It really depends on the game, and single line I play much much faster. Ultimate X is a slower game, and Multi-strike is a slower game, and you can't play as fast on 10 plays as you do on single line.
Say single line jacks. How many hands do you do?
I don't know, 1,000, 1,200, depending on how fast the machine will let me go. If I'm playing a big enough machine, I hope to get enough jackpots that I don't play anywhere near that many hands. But
I guess that's one of the advantages of playing multi-lanes is that it's slower, and then you've got more time to think. That's why I hated Pick'em in the sense that Pick'em, with Jack, you hold in the cards. Then as you're moving your hand over to draw, you can be look. But Pick'em, you just hit one button and it's over. You can't correct for a mistake. So that was the bad thing about Pick'em is I would have to look at it. Then I go 1, 2, 3, choose. I do that. Well, maybe not that slow. If I go 1, 2, 3, choose. Because if I just chose, your brain didn't work like that. So,
yeah, the problem with Pick'em is keeping your concentration. It is a mind-numbing game. It is a trivially easy game most of the time. Occasionally, there's something you have to think about. But but it can just really numb your brain. Another issue on speed has to do with how well I know that particular game. Now, Jax, I am 100% confident that I know every play 100%. If I'm playing, there's other games, certain Druce's Wild variations, that I probably play at the 99.9% level, which is satisfactory perhaps. But nobody plays Deuces Wild games 100% accurately. There are so many exceptions to basically all Deuces Wild games that, but some are worth, you know, a third of a penny if you're playing for dollars. And it's easy to make the decision that I'll, you just fade that because going slow enough to catch every one of those certainly costs you a lot more than you're gaining. So
I think about brain energy per dollar. And I mean, if you could concentrate really hard and get like an extra like 5 cents an hour, but then you can play like 30 minutes less because you had to concentrate extra hard for an hour. Does that make sense?
It does. And I see people look up every close decision. And so it's
now
a decision that is 3 cents difference. Maybe for a dollar player, but they spend 20 seconds or 30 seconds looking it up. And you are, if the game is worth anything, then the that extra, shall we, I'm not sure wasted is the right word, but the extra 20 or 30 seconds you spent cost you far more than the value of 100% accuracy. So 100% accuracy is, it's a luxury, and it can be an expensive luxury sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so much for my soapbox. Now, in addition to the games, there's lots and lots of promotions that you, you've exploited, using your math skills to figure out what's a good promotion or one is not. One I found interesting on your list is Harrah's, New Orleans, and Rolex watches. What was that all about?
Yeah, so this is like the one thing, where, by the way, where I still have like the flyer. It was so cool. But they had, if you play X amount of coin in, they would give you a Rolex. And that's what it said. And it said like perpetual motion or something like that, which every Rolex is. You have no idea what they're giving you. You figure, okay, well, it's like some Air King, which is like the lowest level Rolex. It's still like worth 2%. So we go on there on like Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And on Thursday, my wife and I, we earn a Rolex. And they're like, and we're like, cool. Then Friday, you know, I'm not going to just hang out. I'm not going to play for shits and grins. I just, hey, Friday, I'm just hanging out. The high limit thing, I'm like mapping a slot, you know, just sitting there taking notes. And the host walks up and goes, Jeff, don't you want a Rolex? And I'm like, I already got a Rolex. Thanks. He goes, don't you want more than one Rolex? And I'm like, okay. So I get more than one. And the funny thing was, in the beginning, we're like, okay, this is, you know, they had like a picture of it. We're like, oh, cool. It's a Submariner. And the picture's in black and white. And we're like, okay, well, Submariner is worth like black. You know, at that time, pre-crisis, you know, the Rolex controlled their stuff. And they were worth like, I don't know, $4,000 or $5,000. And then later we found out, oh, their two-tones are worth $8,000. We're like, yes. And then so we earned $8,000. And so... Or like, well, we scored, but then we found out, oh my God, they had to give out like 50 total Rolex. And at the time, Rolexes were controlled more, something, they're like a more of a controlled substance. Like there's no way they can get 8 of them. And we're just waiting to see what's going to happen. So after a couple months, they call up and they go, hey, Jeff, you know, the Cajun host or Henri St. Pierre, so husband goes, hey, Jeff, you want to, you know, it's going to take a while to get your Rolexes. We don't know how long it's going to take. He goes, we've got three options. You can wait. And I'm thinking, that's going to take years. He goes, two, we could give you, you know, whatever credit at the watch shop. And I'm like, eh, you know, but you can't get what you want. Or we'll give you $5,000. So I go, okay, I'll just take the $5,000. So we go in the next time. And they go, well, we got a surprise for you. Here's like your Rolex, your wife's Rolex, and a check for $30,000. So that was pretty cool.
Wow.
And, I was kind of notorious in the sense that after Katrina, all the hosts had spread out. And I remember I went to Bally's and I mentioned something like, oh, yeah, yeah, I used to play New Orleans. I, you know, they're from New Orleans. I used to play New Orleans. I won like 8 Rolexes. They go, oh, yeah, I heard about you. So that was just pretty fun. I still have the Rolex. It's just, you know, that's the cool thing. Whenever you look at this on your wrist, you remember the whole thing. You know, it's like, you know, it's just a memory, you know, that doesn't have a casino like Harris stamp on it. You know what I mean? If you got a Harris shirt and you've got the memory, but you got to be advertising Harris, and I don't do that anymore. So,
all right. So we got lots and lots of more questions to ask Math Boy, and we're out of time for today. Math Boy, is there any chance we can talk to you into taping another show for next week?
Sure, no problem. I'd love to contribute to you guys.
Ah, that is the right answer. All right, so we're going to sign off for today. And if you enjoyed today's show, which I suspect you did, come back next week. We got a lot more questions to ask Math Boy. So thank you, Math Boy. Thank you, Richard. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good day.